What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and talking about pitching today, oh my gosh, I've missed him. It's Eno Saris. Eno,
yeah, good to see you. Took a whole week off. Where have you been?
It's all my fault, you know. It really is. It was family things. I was in Cape Cod.
That sounds terrible.
I know. I actually was like, no, I'm going to still do this. And Eno was like, oh, yeah, cool. We can do it at night. And then my family was like, no. We got to do things. Like, oh, right. Yeah. I don't get full control of what happens in my life right now. I get it.
Yeah.
So thank you all for being patient, but we're back. The second half hath arrived because, I mean, it's not really the real second half starting July 1st, but I felt it would be good to just talk about the first half, reflect upon it, and see what we think is going to change for the second half. Obviously there's certain guys that we think overperformed, underperformed, trends that are happening, all that kind of stuff. And I like to do is always focus on the positive first. I mean, we'll bring it back at the end. Never begin or end with a negative. That's just always, you gotta sandwich it. Okay, so let's talk about positive first, and I think we're on the same page about this one. I cannot quit Mackenzie Gore. I can't do this. I don't think you can either. I absolutely adore Mackenzie Gore's four-seamer. I think his curveball, cutter, slider, one of those is just going to pop off and be this truly reliable pitch for him. I think the hit luck is through the roof. That is our PLV stat that says, hey, based on the pitches that you've thrown, how many hits do we expect you to actually allow on this? And it says, wait, hold on a second. Your four-seamer has allowed far more hits than it should have. 19 more hits. There's a zero percentile on a four-seamer. So I think that there's going to be a much better time for Mackenzie Gore in the second half. And we see those starts of just like absolute domination. And then he just can't really throw as many strikes all of a sudden. I think that Mackenzie Gore is equipped better than the other elite strikeout guys who have maybe some bad walk rates or so, because usually those guys are just a fastball and maybe one secondary pitch. But Mackenzie Gore actually has legitimate secondary pitches. His curveball has a 61% strike rate with a 36% CSW. The slider, I think, is actually this really filthy thing at 91, which is 99th percentile velocity on a slider, which obviously is like a cutter, but 19% swing strike rate on a pitch. And obviously there is room to grow with the changeup with just a 56% strike rate, but 24% swing strike rate on that as well. So I see Mackenzie Gore being just far better than we saw in the first half, where he has a 4.01 ERA. And really the ghastly thing is a 1.43 whip. That has to go down as that hit per nine goes down.
Yeah, I don't think it'll ever be a strength. I mean, for his career, it's 1.43 for his career as well. 300 innings. So, like, I do think it'll go down some. I think he can be like a 1.3 guy. But he's, and I know you have the Blake Snell blueprint. Mm-hmm. And he's not 1,000% in that blueprint, but
he's trying to, right? Yeah,
he's trying to, and also from a statistical standpoint, he has a lot of similarities in that the walks are there, the wildness is there, the strikeouts are there, and the whip is not going to be necessarily a strength, but he's a good pitcher. What we have stumbled into by accident is some fielding discourse, I think.
Ooh.
There is a little bit of a disconnect between maybe the eye test and the numbers when it comes to CJ Abrams in particular and his defense. Mm-hmm. But if you look at DRS, Washington 28th, if you look at UZR 150, Washington 20th, if you look at FRM, fielding runs
made. Manufactured
22nd, outs above average 28th. So there's no way to slice it and say this defense is good.
Great point.
But they're also a team that's going to maybe move some personnel around. You know, I wonder if could you say that somebody like Nick Senzel will no longer be like a big part of this team going forward in the second half. Nick Senzel has a minus 11 UZR 150, minus 4 OAA, and has pissed off somebody named Mackenzie Gore.
Oh, no.
Did you not see this?
No, I did not.
Mackenzie Gore was pitching fine. He gave up a grounder to third, and Nick Senzel lollygagged. I mean, there's no other word. Like, and what's funny is Tom Tango posted arm speed.
Yeah.
And then, like, Nick Senzel's normal arm speed is like 85, and on this throw it was like 71.
Oh no.
And it was like, and when you look at it, and that's why, you know, people accuse like these modern stats of like relitigating baseball. No, mm-hmm. A lot of times they're reaffirming what you see.
Yeah, right. You know, they're just more information about what we saw.
And so you could see it and say he lollygagged, but to say it's like one of the softest throws he's thrown all year, and he just throws it across, and the guy gets an infield single, and Mackenzie Gore's like, "What the hell was that?"
Yeah.
And they go at it in the dugout a little bit. And,
oh, my God.
And I've been tracking. This is just the silliest little thing. But I've been tracking Nick Senzel's hits in Mackenzie Gore starts. And I think he's like 0 for Mackenzie Gore starts. Like, I don't think he would tank at the plate, too, because that's like.
Right. You know, that's going to hurt him.
Yeah. But
that's unreal.
Gore is like looking there and he's saying like, dude, can we get a different third baseman, please?
Yeah.
Luis Garcia actually grades well by everything but DRS. CJ Abrams, DRS and UZR like, but OAA hates.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit more give and take across the board there. Jacob Young is a positive. So James Wood is in. I wouldn't look at his stats yet. It's only 100 and so innings. I would assume that he'd be okay. And then Dylan Cruz at some point is probably going to come up. And right. He's at least a former center fielder. He might replace Winker, who's pretty much a zero on defense. And then Lane Thomas is one of the better trade acquisitions, I think, as a rental. So, and he's one of the negatives on the team. So you're looking at Lane Thomas and Jesse Winker maybe getting replaced by guys like Dylan Cruz and James Wood. And then you're looking like, I don't know who's going to replace Nick Senzel, but somebody at some point. I mean, he looks like a DFA candidate almost. So, you know, the kind of personnel around Gore might help him. But I like what you're saying because you're focusing more on his stuff. And I think it's legit. It's one of the best four-seam fastballs in baseball, I would say.
So I'm going to argue against myself, which is really fun. It's one of my favorite things to do. I do it every day when I write.
King of waffles. Yeah.
Yeah. His ICR, which is a stat that I really do like, of just showcasing what kind of contact he allows, which is higher
earning,
ICR.
Earning some of that bad BABIP.
Oh, boy. 12th percentile overall in ICR. That's 43% of the time when contact is made in play, it is good for the batter. That is part of the reason why it's a 363 BABIP. Should that always be the case? No. It's a second percentile BABIP, but it's not like Mackenzie Gore should have like a 260 or something like that. Like, he should be allowing a fair number of hits. Is it 9.5? No, but is it something like 8.5? Yeah, probably. That does have a huge impact, of course, to your whip. And you're even saying 1.3, and that kind of does track. But he does have to figure out how to keep batters off of the four-seamer, because 46, 47% ICR is not good if you have that kind of a leadoff fastball. Obviously, throwing it harder when contact is made, we do see it go out harder. We see that with Spencer Strider's four-seamer. And Mackenzie Gore doesn't quite have that absurd secondary to back up the 96-plus four-seamer yet. I think over time, the slider can be that. But we still need to see that offering. So those are the limitations to Gore. Still, this, I mean, we're talking 27% strikeout rate so far. Few home runs too, 0.64 homer per nine. And I see the sub 70% left on base changing, all that kind of stuff, all the hotel things, Holy Trinity equating luck. So the stuff I think is truly there. Team context is a great point about the fielding and how things are just not going his way. And how dare you speak so negatively of a Nick? I will tell him you said that in a month in a normal Nick convention. But yeah, Mackenzie Gore is certainly someone that I think should be better in the second half. Is there someone that quickly jumps to you and like, yes, this is the time for this player?
It might already be happening and maybe a little bit late, but Brandon Pfaadt is in my, I'm eyeballing it here, top 10 or 15 in terms of stuff improving. In the first month of the season, he had, let me see here, a 101 stuff plus, which is enough, you know, for a starting pitcher, more than enough if he sort of puts the pieces together. But he's improved his, I believe his curveball and his slider to the point where he's a 106 stuff plus. I just see his work against lefties kind of, he's kind of figuring it out. It reminds me, and the velo, you know, is trending positively. I mean, he was 92,
yeah,
five-ish, and now he's 94 plus, and he's,
yeah, he's been 94 sitting since June 7th.
Yeah. And, you know, in terms of the lefty righty splits, you know, lefties are still hitting 294, 335, 436 against him. You know, I think this is something where that's better than last year. And he's still, he's figuring it out. Like, he's got some things like that he can do against lefties now with multiple fastballs. I think one of the things that he was struggling was, you know, he became a sinker baller, you know, after he discovered the sinker, he became kind of a sinker baller. And then he was like, well, what do I do against lefties? You know, at first the idea was, you know, what should I do against lefties was, you know, well, this is a good pitch. I like it. I'm going to play with the sinker. You know, that's what he did late last year. He threw the sinker and the four seam a ton, both of them to lefties. Then this year he kind of abandoned the sinker against lefties, and didn't throw it, a lot until the last couple of months. He's back up to 15%. And I think that, if you have a good fastball, if you have two good fastballs, and both of his fastballs are around average to slightly above average, if you have two good fastballs, you should play them off each other.
Sure.
And what I like is that he's been really declining the usage of the sweeper against lefties. When I discovered a little thing, we were looking at pulled fly balls recently, and pulled fly balls. This is from an Alex Chamberlain piece.
Always a smart thing to do. Quote an Alex Chamberlain piece, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But sweepers against opposite handed batters give up the most pulled fly balls among any pitch.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah, because you have to essentially wrap around those.
Right. They're kind of coming at you.
Yeah.
And you're it's like almost perfect to just be like, wow. It's,
you know, the only way that you wouldn't is if it's a back door, a backdoor curve or something, and you're trying to push the opposite direction.
Just sort of fillet it or whatever.
Yeah. Right. So you're just pushing it the same way it came in. But most of the time, I mean, especially to lefties, like lefties already generally have a hooked swing. Yeah. And more so, I think, than righties do.
The last thing that I want him to do is, I think he can feature that curve more.
Well, that's the thing that that's so interesting to me is he had this one start, Brandon Pfaadt, where he had the curve going. This was against Oakland, and it actually got me excited. I thought, wait a second, I've been really on that train of just, look, you have to figure out something different against lefties. You have to be able to feature a pitch more than it's just your sweeper, really. Four seamer at times shows some life. Maybe the sinker four-seamer combination is enough. But I really considered Pfaadt as just, hey, great sweeper, nothing else. And at times, it's, you know, that curveball showed up and go, oh, man, wait, hold on. You have a curveball now that can be used against lefties. He actually used it more against the Twins as against the lefties, technically, because he faced more against Oakland. But I felt that that was the answer. And he actually pushed it above 12% usage for the first time, like in ever. And then it came down again. He only threw a handful in the last two starts for Brandon Pfaadt. I felt like a one-time, this is kind of cool. And then it went away. I'm not as sold as you are on the four-seamer sinker being enough against left-handers.
There's a little bit of a cutter coming out. I mean, I don't know if it's true.
Is there? I haven't picked
Brooks
it up.
Baseball says there is one. But, you know, not...
That's, you know me and cutters, okay?
Because he's throwing cutters, 15 in batters. The last 2 months.
Say no more.
I mean, there's something to that. Yeah. Listen, none of his pitches, all of his pitches other than the slider have a zero ISO in June and July against lefties. So like somewhat of an ideal mix there, although it is surprisingly fastball heavy.
Right.
You know, but I think it's evidence that something's going on there. One that I that's in my top 15 for improved stuff plus. There's one that's like duh, and then he's right next to a guy you're like, huh, Zach Gallen.
When he's coming back from the IL,
the velo's back.
Well, I think it wasn't, and then it is kind of. Gallen's had a little bit of a journey. I think it's in 4 starts, and two of them were fantastic. I mean, even in the bad one against the Dodgers, he still had velocity, 96. He averaged in that start, and he had curveballs down and stuff. And he
just, right. Okay, so the Dodgers game, he sat 96,
and then all of a sudden he was talking about
hitting 100. Remember after the game, he was like, "I want to hit 100."
Yeah. And then he was 94-94 the two starts after.
Well, either way, both seen in some, this is like the last 5 games of his best velo of the year. And that was a little bit of a worry early on. So maybe he's just going to be kind of a Luis Castillo where he kind of just ramps up slowly over the course of the season. His results never told us to worry. So this is just more like, okay, you know, I'm glad I didn't drop him too far. I was always around like 12, 13, 14 in my rankings. And I felt nervous about it, but I was like, he's an established pitcher who's done this before, who's came out as BB is fine, who's doing okay. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, he's going to make it right next to him. So his stuff is up. So he was at 94 before. Now he's at 108. Like, I'm like, phew. Like, I don't know how far to push him. He's at 12 in my working ranks. Like,
yeah, I have him at like 25.
Yeah.
Well, there are just so many good pitchers, you know?
Yeah. And then, right next to him, is a guy who went from 115 stuff plus to 128.
Oh, wait, who could that be? Who would that be?
It would surprise you because his results have not been great. He plays
like Kikuchi.
No, he plays for a large market team with very reactionary fans.
What was that, like Luis Hill?
Well, he's down at the bottom. He's lost a lot of stuff. Carlos Rodon.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. I agree with this.
128 stuff plus.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has a 391 Sierra, a 463 ERA. He has the same fastball velocity he's had for 4 straight years, of which 2 years he had an ERA below 3. I have watched him some, and stuff plus loves his fastball, loves his slider. Even says his secondary pitches doesn't use as much are great. There seems to be something when I'm watching him that I'm like I know he throws the fastball 50% of the time. I know stuff plus says it's good. I kind of think he should do the Boston approach. I think fastball 40% of the time.
He did it. When he went against, I think it was the Orioles, or maybe it was a game before the Orioles, like in preparation for them. He went 25% fastballs. It was the game against the Reds on July 3rd. It was 26% four seamers, where he went 37% slider, 23% changeup, 14% curveball. And I'm so on board with this. I'm with you. They were even talking with Matt Blake, saying Matt Blake was like, yeah, we got to figure this out because guys are realizing that, yeah, he's just going to throw these four seamers in this spot and they're just going to sit on that and force him to do more with the slider. So showcase that you have more pitches you can go 3-4 at any point. And then they have to stay honest. I dig that. I think that's kind of how it was 4 innings and 98 pitches, but still 200 runs, 7 Ks against Baltimore, who are good against lefties. So I kind of believe it too. I'm a fan.
I guess there's only 2 reasons that he wouldn't do it. I mean, 3. 3 is one, he's just like, hey, my fastball is good. What are you talking about? 2 is, my back hurts when I throw the slider.
Oh, have you heard that?
Throw that out there because Garrett Cole. Why is he throwing the cutter so much?
Yeah,
he throws slider forever. He told me, he said, I don't like to throw the cutter. It messes with my fastball. And now he's 20% cutter, like 8% slider. Something's going on there, and he's coming back.
Yeah, that's weird. I mean, watching him, he hasn't had the feel for his slider as much. Right. And I think he's
trusting the cutter a little bit more as training or something, or
maybe it's you just trust that, cool, the cutter, I know I can keep guys off the heater in this moment, while the slider I don't trust. I don't know. He even went to the knuckle curve instead of the slider in his last start against the Orioles.
I mean, it speaks to me that's, I think that's like, did you ever have that? Like, have a pitcher where, like, one pitch hurt you more than others?
No.
I said something about a certain pitch, and he's like, I could never do that because it hurt or whatever. Like,
yeah, I didn't personally have it. I mean, that said, I didn't have the greatest slider ever. I had a certain feel for certain ones I couldn't do. But I personally didn't have that. But I can understand it as, you know, you're not throwing every single pitch exactly the same way. And because of that, you are tweaking slightly here and there. And sometimes it's uncomfortable. And sometimes it just doesn't feel right. I remember Seth Lugo. Not Seth Lugo. I'm so sorry. Steven Matz.
He not throwing throw the slider because it hurt his elbow. He couldn't throw the Worthen slider. That was like the hard-ass slider. Yeah.
And it was such a good pitch for him. They said, yeah, no, I can't do it. It hurts my elbow. I'm like, what? Okay. And then he was doing so poorly. So Steven Matz went, he's like, all right, I guess I'll throw the slider.
Yeah. Yeah, his Duff Plus improved, and he didn't pitch much after that. Rodon, I mean, the one thing that's different about Rodon versus Cole is that Cole is coming from an arm injury, whereas Rodon, I thought it was back.
Yeah, it was last year, and then there was some shoulder stuff too, I think.
Okay, so
shoulder. It was initially that, then it was shoulder. I mean, there was a lot of things.
The last thing is just command, and it could be command, except that right now he's commanding a slider better by location plus, at least he's commanding a slider better than his four seam. He's had above average command of a slider for his career. And I'm not saying that he should throw a ton of curves and changes. I'm basically saying he should up the slider usage and down the fastball usage. That's my, you know, small difference.
So I'm agreeing with you. Yeah. I mean, even in the last start, he actually did like pure elevated upper third four seamer with sliders filling up the zone, changes filling up the zone, curveballs in the zone, pitching backward in this way. You can see that was the intent of the Blake Snell blueprint with four seamers top half, secondary stuff bottom half against the Rays. I think that this is actually what Rodon is trying to do. I think it should work, really. And I think it's a great pick for improvement in the second half.
There's still some whiff of injury about him. The fact that he just went four innings in the last two.
Well, 98 pitches. It was
really? It was just super inefficient.
Yeah. Lots of foul balls. By the Orioles in that one. Also 14% overall swing strike rate. I mean, his last four games have come with at least 15%, all double digits since, I don't know, the 24th of May. And that was a good start. That was just like, those were turned into outs instead of hits or foul balls. So I love that pick with Carlos Rodon. And I mean, I already hinted at someone else. I mean, obviously we can't even say like Blake Snell. That was a fun start. Great. Good on you. Throwing strikes, good stuff. I'm going to give you a sneaky one because I could, you know, I could say Yusei Kikuchi because I just think that his four seamer is looking great. His slider's back. That's cool. Edward Cabrera. I'm ready. Let's go. I'm here for it.
I'm just laughing because DVR and I disagree on Edward Cabrera.
How do you feel about Edward Cabrera?
I keep coming in.
Yes. Like, you hear that, DVR?
I'm a toughest, dude. I'm just gonna keep trying.
Did you? Okay, I watched all of this game against the Reds, on the 13th. It was 700 runs, 3.1 innings, 7 Ks, 0 walks. You know those games where you watch a guy, and like nobody can touch him, but then when they touch him, it's a home run. He left four home runs in this game, and then he left with like all four of them were solo shots. And then he left the game with the bases loaded. The final pitch was hitting a batter. So he allowed four solo shots for four hits, then like two stupid hits, hitting a batter, and he was out of the game. And of course, all three of them scored. There's your seven earned runs, but seven strikeouts. So we earned 10 outs and 7 Ks and 0 walks. Like, I was watching this just going, what is going on here? He's just dominating these guys. And then all of a sudden, oh, here's a home run. Fine, whatever. I don't know. I'm a huge fan of Edward Cabrera's changeup. I think that actually I still think he should throw a little bit softer. That's just me. One of the home runs, especially the Spencer Steer one, was inside. And I think he was timed for a fastball, but got it at 95 of a changeup. So thus he was able to hit it. But if it was slower, like a proper 91 or something, he would have swung right over it or swung through it. Would not have gotten the timing right. So you have a curveball in there too. You have a slider that you should throw more. The fastball is actually with intent upstairs and not really just the most wild thing ever. I just believe that Edward Cabrera is going to put this together. I'm a fan. I don't know. I see that he's not an 826 ERA, 159 WHIP guy. He has a 32% K rate.
I mean, yeah, just look at Kayvon's BB. It's out of line. But you know, here's a funny way of putting it. His ERA is double his away from home as it is home.
Mm-hmm.
It's 12 on the road.
It's three. Hold on. That's six. Three games. It's three games.
Three games. Okay. So I'm going to slip over to career here real quick. 3.94 for his career at home, 5.16 on the road. That's just how I'm, you know, suggesting people use him basically. You know, even this year, if you had played the, you know, who would I play, start him against game, you would have at home only been burned. You would have been burned by Colorado.
Two of them, Colorado, Rocky Road, and the Nationals.
But you wouldn't have started him against the Dodgers in LA for two innings and four earned runs. And you wouldn't have started him in Cincinnati, I don't think, for the 3 1/3 and seven earned runs. So
if you want 7 Ks, you got that at least.
You would be he'd be taking 11 earned runs off the back of the baseball card with some tricky usage. For now, what I'm doing is I've got him in places. Where my benches are deeper and I'm holding him, and I may even hold him through a home start just to, you know, see him do something good.
Why doesn't he throw the slider more?
I don't know.
It's really good. 70% strike rate, 19% swing strike rate, 31% ICR.
These Marlins are pretty enamored with their power changeups and power curves.
Yeah,
that was the, you know, I wonder, you have these joke sort of blueprints, right?
Yep.
And I wonder if like organizations can get in trouble developing somebody and then just kind of having that, like, it's almost like confirmation bias or recency bias, where it's like the Guardians are like, hey, we made, you know, superstars out of Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez. So let's just keep, you know, getting a lot of soft hitting, you know, contact guys and see if they grow into power, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that that's necessarily what's happened. And
well, I mean, let's think about this. Every fantasy baseball manager has thought like, okay, here's my strategy. This is what I go for. You know,
right,
like,
right, everyone right. does work for them in the past.
Yeah. Right. right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I spent 5 years, you know, not drafting pitchers before the 10th round because, you know, that works.
That's the way to do it by the way. Don't draft pitches.
So in Miami, I feel like, you know, one thing I do know from sort of reporting and sourcing is just that the Marlins are kind of enamored with unique fastballs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know that Edward Cabrera's is like super unique, but I would say that, you know, you could look at Sandy Alcantara and somebody could say, well, this is a four-seam league. And, you know, they did try to kind of use more four-seamers with him.
Oh,
and
yeah.
At some point, they were like, "Yeah, screw it. You know what? His sinker is his best pitch. That's going to be his home pitch. Like he still threw four seamers when you know when he's going well. But they kind of just switched to what his primary fastball was, and it was the sinker. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the more unique pitch that Sandy throws, the unique fastball. And mm-hmm. so if those two things are true, that they really like unique fastballs, and they made this change with Sandy, and that was part of unlocking Sandy. Then maybe they think, well, Sandy also threw this power curve and this power change. Let's just kind of, it's almost like the Mariners teaching everybody the sweeper. It's like, let's just teach everybody right. the power curve and power change. And I'm not telling Edward Cabrera not to throw the power change. I'm just saying, you know, Stuff Plus thinks it's okay. Stuff Plus loves that slider that he doesn't throw. And, you know, if he's looking for a way out when it comes to location strategy, you know, and something he can command, Location Plus says that he commands his slider better than his fastballs.
Yeah, no, I so agree with that.
This could be a little way out if anybody on the Marlins is listening.
Yeah, make sure Edward Cabrera throws more sliders, okay, guys?
It could be.
It's a really good pitch. And I have to mention, too, Sandy Alcantara kind of figured out a bit how to utilize his arsenal. Even though the final season of 4.14 ERA isn't everything that everyone wanted, 20% K rate, fine. He did utilize four seamers late and upstairs, and that pitch had a 23% put away rate for an 87th percentile because he's mixing up the sinker. Sinker was not a whiff pitch. It was a really good pitch to jam batters with 36% ICR, but the four seamer 16% overall swing strike rate. Beautiful. So that's how Sandy figured that out a bit. It did get hit harder than ideal when he left it over the plate. But yeah, that slider for Sandy was phenomenal too.
I've had some people coming to me with some angst about Dylan Cease.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's, you mean me?
Well, just because he's a little up and down.
Well, oh yeah. So
the Texas start and the Milwaukee start that,
oh man.
And then Mets start. I mean, that's three of his last six starts with 17 earned runs.
Yeah.
And the other three hit three earned runs combined.
So a good transition there. Is Dylan Cease on your doing better or doing worse for the second half?
I mean, it says here that his stuff plus is increasing. Mm-hmm. And it says that he has
Dragon Ball Z or something, like it's his power level is increasing.
It's up. And in particular, I think his fastball 130 stuff plus, and then his knuckle curve is 114. Mm-hmm. He needs to stop throwing that ridiculous changeup thing. But well, he doesn't throw.
I mean, even his curve, though, he throws it 8% of the time, and it's just a 55% strike rate.
Yeah. You
know, this is not a reliable offering for him.
Yeah. And I agree with you about the cutter could be a thing for him. But it is, he does not locate it well by location plus the cutter. And so maybe he just doesn't have the feel for it to make it what you want for him.
He's thrown 15 this season. Yeah. I have a very long rant that I can share with you.
15 is not enough for location plus. That's true.
And I have a very long rant about Dylan Cease if you'd like to hear it.
Yeah. I'm staying in. I know it's going to be up and down, but I like it.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think the quality of a slider itself is just, you have to with the four seamer that I don't really think is the worst commanded pitch. It's just, you need that. You got to go the Kodai Senga route. Consider the slider Kodai Senga's forkball. Really just think of it like that. And Kodai Senga has a hard throwing fastball. He just doesn't really spot it super well, but what makes it effective is the cutter living inside the zone. And kind of like you're talking about with four seamers and sinkers, you have the cutter to play off of the sinker, and it makes it really hard and amplifies both of them because they both exist inside the zone. And you can't really read on which one it is. So my theory about Dylan Cease, everyone, is that there was a moment. I mean, I made giant tweets about Dylan Cease. Oh my gosh, what is this? It's a cutter. After in the preseason going, please throw a cutter, please throw a cutter. He's thrown 15 of them. I believe two things. One, his mentality of that cutter is not what it should be. And two, I think he allowed a home run to Ryan McMahon on a cutter inside that actually was like a really well-located one right off the plate inside. And then just saw that and thought like Jameson Taillon did, allowing a cutter inside to Brandon Marsh last year, and just said, yep, nope, I'm good. I'm not going to try that again. Experiment failed, right? And without really trying. And to me, I'm just so upset because I see him try this curveball, this sweeper, this changeup, and none of these are solving the actual problem. The actual problem of why guys are able to sit on this heater and hit more home runs off of them than he wants is not because they're, you know, looking just, it's just such a hittable four-seamer. Oh, and if I throw a curveball, I'll change it. No, then they'll completely change their attack. They need something else in the zone that isn't a four-seamer that kind of looks like a four-seamer.
It's and like anticipation. They can hit good pitches if they know it's coming. If it's
exactly. And not to say that Dylan Cease has like the greatest pristine command ever. No, he has allowed home runs on pitches that aren't exactly where they're supposed to be. And sometimes he does where they're supposed to be because they're just, as you said, in the anticipation of it. So you got to get a pitch that isn't your four seamer or your slider that you can throw for a strike. And it has to be something that nullifies not the slider, but nullifies the four seamer. And that's the cutter. So instead of where he's located it, which is trying to go against a lefty, against the lefty, which is up and in, precisely up and in that little box of right where the chest is.
He should just throw it sort of
just
like
throw it over the plate. Just throw it over the plate. It doesn't really matter. I mean, I wouldn't even say don't even go in the upper third, like try and go like even middle and down.
Like middle. Because
right? Because what you can get away with is that they're thinking this four seamer is going to go up above. So they're going to try and get on top of this every time. Mm-hmm. And then that means you're going to get underneath. They're going to get grounders on this thing.
I think you still want to throw it upper third so it looks like the fastball coming in.
The only argument I have with that is if they couldn't get to the fastball before, now you're helping them.
Right, right.
right? But otherwise, if it's down, they'll be locked in on it. Now go underneath it, right?
But I have seen some people throwing cutters. It was one in the All-Star game.
Oh, the Cannibal McSanchez is what I call that.
Cutters high and tight to righties?
It's cutters as a lefty or as a righty?
As a righty.
I mean, that would be like Class A or Jansen.
Yeah, Class A was doing it.
Okay.
And then Smoltz was like, that's where you want to throw it. And I was like, well, not usually, but for Class A, it works. But
I mean, yeah,
that could work for Cease too, because he could throw it. Like, where do you throw a four seam to a righty? High and tight's a pretty good spot.
Right.
You know,
and then come back over and surprise them on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. It does go kind of towards the middle, but if you're keeping it high, at least it's middle high and not
right.
You know, middle.
So what I did mention is the Cannibal McSanchez, which is my term for guys who try and get called strikes with cutters at the top of the zone. So they think it's a fastball. It's going to go out of the zone. Then comes back down.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah.
So that's Colin McHugh and Cannibal Sanchez.
Cease has thrown us into another little interesting sidetrack here that we should talk about after this break. So Max Bay had this interesting tweet. Max Bay created a Stuff Plus. We created it together, and he's @choice_fielder on Twitter. And he's back from working for the Astros.
Astros. I think that honestly, they put their head in the sand. I'm just kidding. Okay.
And he did something. It's just kind of random, but I've never seen anybody do it, which was, he did a percentage of fastballs with more than 20 inches of IVB by month and by season.
Oh.
And a couple trends emerge. One trend is just that you had more IVB in the past,
mm-hmm.
And specifically before enforcement.
Right.
So there were more 20 inch vertical break
Walker Buehler
fastballs before enforcement. So what you have, I think, post enforcement is, you know, I've talked about this trend that now multiple fastballs. So you just instead of having one great fastball that has 20 IVB, you have three okay fastballs and you play them off each other, just like we were talking about with Cease, right?
Mm-hmm.
We also have the rise of sinkers and cutters. Sinkers and cutters are back up for the first time in years.
Let's go. Yeah. Use them right. The same thing, just the opposite end batters.
Exactly. That was a big deal. Using the right fastball against the right hand, that's part of it. But also, I think maybe focusing on some new shapes. I think seam shifted wake research is getting some place where seam shifted wake research kind of gave us sweepers first. But you can use that for cutters and you can use it for four seamers. You can use it for sinkers.
Right.
You can use it for most pitches just to get unexpected movement versus the spin and the arm slot. So I think seam shifted wake research is kind of coming into its own. So it's enforcement. It's what people are looking for, what they're developing. But then lastly, there's the curve of it over time is really interesting too. It's just, it starts out high. The number of 20 inch fastball starts out, a 20 inch vertical fastball starts out high, goes down, and the bottom is in July. And then it goes back up. And I don't really know why that is. I have two theories. One is that there's some sort of weather contingency.
Yeah.
But I guess we know that there's this weird nonsensical thing that, like, I'd say nonsensical because I'm not a scientist, but apparently humid weather is lighter than non-humid weather. And so perhaps the ball doesn't have as much to grip.
Is it lighter? Okay, so hold on. So hot air rises.
Water molecules are lighter than air molecules.
Creating some buoyancy, essentially.
H2O is lighter than O2.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, I'm
two
with you.
Two H's is lighter
than
O.
Yeah. Two H's plus one O.
Yeah. So if you have more water molecules in the air, and so there, the ball is going through the air easier, maybe it doesn't grip the air and get as much ride out of the same amount of spin.
Sure.
So there could be a weather contingency. Then there is also just are the 20-inch vert guys would get hurt, because there was a recent piece by Drew Haugen in Down on the Farm linking spin to injury.
So that doesn't surprise me. I mean,
it surprised me because it's the first time I've seen it. It doesn't surprise me necessarily intuitively.
We talk about velocity to injury, and we know that spin and
velocity. We know they're together. Yeah. And then spinning the ball sometimes requires an extra, like we know that hard breaking balls stress you more per MPH than fast balls.
It's you know, when I was growing up, you throw your arm out, kid, because everyone would throw a curveball wrong by twisting their wrist. You'll get a little bit more spin, but that's hurting your arm. And so there's that element to it as well.
The Worthen slider, I think, hurt people's arms. If you look at everybody who threw it, everyone got hurt. I hate to put that on somebody because that's a legacy.
The way he described
it to me, Dan Worthen described it to me, the way they all described it to me sounded like it hurt. It was like, you throw it like a cutter, and you throw it as hard as you can like a cutter, and at the end you go,
oh, then you twist your wrist at the end.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Yeah. I literally thought, oh my gosh. I'm so.
Doesn't that sound painful?
Yeah, that is painful. That is wrong. Yeah. That is literally what throw your arm out, kid, was. That's what I just described.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You should have called it like.
It's possible that DeGrom doesn't throw it that way anymore, but that's how it was. That's how Jake described it to me. That's how Matt's described it to me. That's how Worthen described it. I did a whole piece about the Worthen slider. If you want to go back and look, it's a Fangraphs piece. But so I wonder if there's a touch of injury about it. Anyway, Dylan Cease, if you look at his game log.
Yes.
For IVB, he actually started out pretty nice with this is Brooks, I think, but with 11s. Mm-hmm. I hate somebody just universal language, please. Anyway,
whatever hours is, guys.
They started out with the nice IVB, and then he kind of retreated a little bit, and it's climbing back up again. So, you know, we could see. The fastball just sort of outstuff its problems in August. Sure. And
I mean, we've seen this from like Luis Gil had a problem with his IVB going
and he
down. Got,
and he kind of busted through back. That. Yeah.
And this is, I mean, that's another theory of mine, which is that that pitchers, especially younger ones, generally do well if they have really good stuff. They do well at first, and then they have their first moment of adversity where there's some problem. And whenever they figure that out, then they have the plateau of success. This is just generally how I think about younger pitchers. And Luis Gil had that really nice stretch.
I'm a little bit worried. I agree with you
intuitively.
And like when you're talking about like mindset.
Right. And like, you know, the adjustments
about
you make.
Fatigue,
you feel confident more.
And lack of innings.
Well, the IVB did go back up. So he was underneath 15 and he got back up to 16 plus again.
I think he's fine. I think he's fine, but
it's the Tommy John honeymoon. We're still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you're doubting that too. I remember in the offseason. Cool. So, you know, believes in the Tommy John honeymoon. He's like, yeah, well, I don't know if I believe. I'm like, what? No.
Well, you have Keith Meister, who's like, you know, Tommy John guy, saying that revisions are coming faster than they used to.
Oh, yeah. Right. That doesn't surprise me. Yeah. They're just getting better at the surgery.
And I know that Glenn Fleissig, I think, thinks that there's no Tommy John honeymoon. And he's one of my North Stars when it comes to injuries. He works at the ASMI.
So it's so funny because I was having a fun theory of the healthiest pitchers are the ones coming back from TJ.
I mean, I still think that I don't like him in the first year. You know, like I would like Robbie Ray a little bit more next year than I would. I've tried to own him like through this situation.
But if you roster him, it could be like Tarek Skubal.
Yeah. Yeah, but wasn't even Tarek Skubal better in the second year?
Well, I mean, second half, I'm talking like second half last year. And then it technically wasn't Tommy John.
He's better this year. He was last year. So I think generally I like getting them if they're, especially if there's any sort of boost. Mm-hmm. I like getting them after they've, this is what I want them to do. I want them to establish they're on the field and pitching healthy. Before I invest, and so
So you're not gonna, so McClanahan, Alcantara, no for you next year,
probably not. I mean, unless they come back and pitch at the end of this year, even if DeGrom comes back and pitches 15 innings, I like him better than if he doesn't.
Sure, you know I mean, DeGrom to me is DeGrom is certainly someone that I'm like, Tommy John, you have the elbow now. You have it. This is the 1 year we have it.
Yeah, right. You know?
So it's gonna be 2020.
There are too many guys like, remember Cole Reagans,
mm-hmm.
where Who? You know, he comes off of the Tommy John, he just never comes back. And he had to get the second.
Right.
And
he had to get
there it. Are yeah, guys that that happens to.
Yeah. The surgery was bad.
Where they just never really make it all the way back.
Well, I mean, yeah. Well, he had to get it again and then he made it, obviously.
And look at look at Walker Buehler. If you wanted to invest in Walker Buehler this year because you thought, well, he had all last year to recuperate.
Great point.
And then Dodgers are like, well, he's not quite there. And now he's in Florida.
That's a great transition into stuff decline. And by the way, also, wait, actually, I'm not going to move off of this for a second. How nuts is that? I'm sorry. This blew my mind.
He's just out in Florida.
Well, it's just like, obviously, if there's one team I've been most critical of this on this podcast, and I apologize I've been critical at all, but I've been shouting at the Dodgers, what are you doing with like pitch approach and all of their pitchers not throwing upstairs and all this kind of stuff. And here is the player of an organization saying, hi, I'm going to train with a different organization. I mean, it's not like it's just a random team. This is
Eric Cressy. Eric Cressy is the Yankees, works for the Yankees.
What? Yeah. I mean, is there any profession that works like this?
<You're right.
laughs> And not even just like a random team. Again, this is like the leaders. We praise the Dodgers for this stuff. And they're in Walker Buehler is like, I'm going to go to a third party because I don't think that this is good enough. Yeah. How does that happen?
I mean, I think that there's it might be slightly unique, but I think across all sports, there's been a thing where you've had to include the off season labs, the off season player development coaching labs in your process as an organization. Mm-hmm. So you've had to be like, okay, you went to Driveline, so give us the number of your trainer there. Let us stay in touch. We want to like be involved and know what mm-hmm. you're up to. And so I think the better organizations have processes in place where like, for example, heard that like Teacher Man is this ridiculous hitting instructor that mm-hmm. taught Aaron Judge. But, I heard that one organization was not in love with the stuff he was saying, and they had a player that was. And to make it work better for them, they had their hitting coach take Teacher Man's course.
Oh, interesting.
And know how Teacher Man speaks. And then they invited Teacher Man to spring. And they basically said, okay, we're cool. Like, we don't agree with him on everything, but we're cool with you doing this. And then at some point, the player had like a 0-for-20. And he was like, so what do you guys think?
Yeah, right.
And they're like, okay, yeah, we're here. It's a dance.
Makes more sense to me.
This is a little bit weird because it's in the middle of the season.
I guess what I'm getting at is, if I'm the Dodgers, like, how many millions and millions and millions of dollars do you have? And how do you not just say, who is that guy in Florida? Like, here's $20,000. Just come hang out with us and Buehler for whatever. And like, we'll figure this out together. You know, we'll just get you in here to be our consultant.
He's sort of on the level of Kyle Bodie, though. So it's like, you know, I don't know. I don't think it works that way. I think he's kind
of fair enough. Or I mean, even 20,000 is I'm probably cheap shotting it, but you don't understand what I'm getting at. Like, if they feel if I'm running a team, fine, get me the five best. Like, that's going to be a drop in the bucket, and we can all work on this together. Why wouldn't you want that, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I just think that, you know, I think Buehler and Karinchak might be the people that lost the most during enforcement.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, so the whole Buehler thing is wild to me because also, like, his stuff wasn't terrible, right? And you know, watching his starts, it very much felt as if Buehler wasn't. I don't know. He just
lost some IVB, but it still
was good. It wasn't like it was a bad.
You know, and the other thing that Sticky Stuff did that was not just IVB was just breaking ball command. And he was just being able to put stuff where you want
to because the ball's staying on your hand longer.
Here's a guy who throws like four breaking balls, so like maybe it would have helped him, but.
I mean, maybe would you say that Bobby Miller is the other one that I was going to segue to, but I had to just express.
Well, I mean, I have Bobby Miller as one of the biggest Stuff Plus losers. And then there was a big discourse on Twitter the other day about his command. And I, My point is just this, that like, I don't think it's really enough sample to say that he'll never have good command and that he never had good command.
I don't.
There's a lot of people saying like, you know, he'll never spot his fastball, or he has terrible fastball command. My theory is just that he's not all the way back. He's just not all the way back. Like if you look at his stuff, like 107 stuff plus in the last 30 days, 126 at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he was like a stuff plus leader last year. So like the stuff is not all the way back. You could say, well, why can't he succeed at 107 or whatever, you know? And that's a good point. But he was never like an elite command guy. I'm just saying,
sure. No,
like
I'm an
average command guy that was plus elite stuff. And now he's like above average stuff and maybe below average command for now.
Well,
I think he can get it to go. Like, I think he's a prime like keeper in Dynasty League buy, but I have a really hard time ranking him for the rest of the season. And I've got him right now. He's dropping like a stone. It's like his 50s or 60s. I mean,
well, here's the thing, you know, I have a few luxuries in life, but one of them is if you're in
you don't have to rank him.
I don't have to rank them.
I was also like, where do I put Yoshinobu Yamamoto? He's like out for another month, you know.
it's over 10 years of doing the list. I'm just like, this is the best system, and I can tell you we're relatively, when they're healthy, this is generally where they are in a landscape that is always changing. So I can't tell you the answer to that, but going back to Bobby Miller, I just like it with Buehler, watching those games, I didn't feel as if Bobby Miller was pitching terribly. I didn't feel as if he was not a good pitcher, essentially.
Yeah.
I don't think the approaches were there. Like, it's the same thing I saw with Buehler of, I guess, lack of confidence, which makes sense.
Identity. Identity, but, confidence, like a
yeah,
like a,
and like, cool, this is how I'm going to attack these guys. I'm going to execute this thing, then I'm going to do this thing here. And I didn't really see that from Bobby.
Like,
Miller.
I think there are better days for Grayson Rodriguez coming than he even has now.
But yeah, Grayson's weird. Grayson's not a
he's
command.
He's pretty
guy,
good. Right? He's good, but I don't think he knows how good he can be. Like, I think there's like another level for him where he puts it together better.
Well, one of my favorite memes is the Bernie Sanders meme of him saying, "Once again, I'm asking you." And it's, once again, I'm asking you to locate your changeup.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Just put it low. Because your four-seamer, Grayson, your four-seamer is in the top third of the zone. You are so good at it. It gets hit hard because batters just look up all the time. And you need to do the blueprint. It is made for you.
Maybe you could alternate with some low fastballs. Like, do the Walker.
You could do that too. Yeah. But I'll give him praise of like, hey, you have precision on something. Great. Don't mess that up.
that's what it's so hard about pitching, right? Is adding.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's so many, you get fixated. Oh, I can do this one thing. I know I can do this one thing. Yeah, it's great. I can do this one thing. And then you're like, oh, I got to keep doing this one thing because that's all I can do. But you got to add to it without subtracting with what you already do. And you got to find a way to keep doing that one thing, but make it better by doing something else off of that. Like Greinke was good at that.
Frankie
was like, I've got a power change. Everybody, look at this awesome ass power change. And people are like, after a while, they were like, okay, but it's, you know, your fastball keeps getting worse. And he's like, okay, I'll throw high and tight power changes.
Right.
It's like,
no, you gotta figure out the other thing. I mean, Tyon had a good quote about this where he was saying, look, I was in this 0-2 count and I was really feeling my cutter. And I knew that if I threw a high four seam this time, I would get a strikeout. But I didn't believe in that right then. I knew I had my cutter. And I knew if I threw it right, I would get an out on it. And he threw it and he got an out on it. And that in my head's like, yeah, but you could have had a strikeout. Like, you had a chance for this, but like, no, right. You were feeling something. And he said, I know I can do this thing. I don't know if I can do that other thing. And even though it's going to be a lower reward, the risk is much lower in my head. Mm. And that risk reward balance is always what's going on. Pablo said the same thing about what the risk reward is in every pitch. And I think a lot of the really good command guys,
I saw him and I said hi for you.
Oh, really? Oh man, I missed him when he was in New York and I was so sad about it.
He's nice,
I appreciate
guy,
you, you know,
such a nice guy.
He's the nicest dude ever.
He really is.
But he actually had a good quote about like, okay, is the risk reward right? And yeah, those command guys, they know. Yeah. Like Dallas Keuchel in his prime doing what I call the proper neck beard approach, which is avoiding the face and going around it. Right. Up his bone. Right, he doesn't throw in the zone. He goes just around it.
Yeah,
and what he understood is, look, I'm going to.
He had elite command,
right? And he always had the lowest risk. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that he had the highest reward. It was always just the lowest risk.
No.
And people say that's pitching scared. I think the guys that know what they can do is just chase the lowest risk and you will get through games. A lot of times we see that in the playoffs too, and they know that because they have relievers who will come in after four innings or so. Just get through four with the lowest amount of risk. And I think a lot of pitchers are pitching that way as opposed to the past, just like, oh, it's just low strikes. They can't hit it out. It's fine. You know, and that obviously changed over time. But watch a guy and see, like, is he risking things or not? Is he actually taking chances or is he nibbling and actually doing that? And you could be like, oh, yeah, because you're a command guy. I hope that, I mean, man, imagine like Bobby Miller was like that. Oh,
that much power with command.
Oh, man. Oh, it'd be so nice. Is there anyone else, I think, for the second half that you're like, okay, I don't believe this. Because, I mean, I'll give you a quick one, which is kind of like what you were saying a bit with fastballs and be like, hey, you just need three of them and you'll get by with okay ones. That has been Jake Irvin. That's how he's done it. I know the curveballs gets all the focus. Hey, lots of curveballs have been so successful in the zone. But he only gets there because it's four-seamer, sinker, cutter, just kind of being around.
But you think it's not going to work as well in the second half?
I don't think so. Because I think he's...
You know, one of the things is none of those fastballs are very good.
No, they're not. And that's what you were saying before. Three fastballs can make up for it. It's
Fetty,
the curveball Fetty being is like everything.
Fetty.
Like yeah. So Irvin's had a nice
I have
run.
Fetty losing, stumbles. Losing a lot
Fetty
of
Fetty losing
stuff
it.
Here. Losing a lot of stuff. He got him down to 84 from off. From
is he throwing fewer sweepers? Is that why? Because we know that PLV loves sweepers too.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what it is, but his fastballs, you know, 74 and 78 stuff plus.
Yeah, they're never been a premier one.
Okay, well, I've got an obvious one, but I think it's a little bit interesting. I'm going to fly by this one real quick. It's just Jordan Hicks is the biggest stuff plus loser.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's sort of obvious because he was converting. It's near, you know, he's going into new innings totals that he hasn't been doing. You know, he's losing velo. He's still at 95, so it's okay-ish. It could still work. But it is also interesting because if you're a traditional projections guy that's looking at, like, left on base percentage and strikeout rates and, you know, like, traditional guideposts for that stuff, you would have been out. You would have thought this is the real Hicks all along.
Right.
And I was tempted for a while to be like, no, his stuff is really good. Like he could keep this up, but then the stuff went down. So
yeah.
I'm like,
yeah. Well,
okay. I think you guys are right. Here are the two that are more hot takey.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm gonna try them out here.
Oh no.
The middle of ranking. And right now I have Chris Sale fourth, but I also have Chris Sale as losing more stuff plus from the beginning of the season to now than any other pitcher not named Jared Jones or Jordan Hicks. And Jared Jones lost it from, like, you know, 130 down to 115.
Okay.
So it's like,
okay, all right.
You know, he's still plus plus. I don't really care about that. Chris Sale went from 100 stuff plus, went from actually 112 stuff plus to 90.
Whoa. That's surprising.
And I just don't know how much to worry about it because the results, I think he's fine.
Because PLV loves him.
Yeah, location plus 103. For the year, the stuff plus is 103. So, like, you know, maybe I should just say, you know, he's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, especially because, again, the guideposts, the traditional guideposts, like 32% strikeout rate, 5% walk rate.
Right.
Nothing to worry about there.
And I do wonder if that's because he's throwing fewer sliders and stuff might be leaning into the slider being this major stuff plus pitch. I mean, which one of the fastball, sinker, slider, changeup is the breadwinner of stuff? It's got to be a slider, right?
It's a slider. Yes, it's a slider.
So in the beginning of the year, we saw games above 40% comfortably. We saw 50% thrown.
Yes, and right. It's more 50-50 fastball slider.
Looks like changeup is getting a little bit more involved as well than early in the season.
And the stuff plus hates his changeup, 59.
Yeah, there
but
you go.
But in terms of outcomes on the changeup, 114 average, 143 slugging, Yes, yeah, I'm glad I tested that out. I don't think I'm worried. Here's the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Shota Imanaga.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the velocity's gone a little bit down. The IVB's gone down on the four seam.
Yes. That one I'm a little bit more actually worried about.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about a guy who I think this is hard because I don't actually have sourcing and I'm not implying that he's hurt. But one of the reasons why he could have gotten the contract that he got could have been that people looked at his medicals and didn't like it. And we know that he has been hurt in Japan. Mm-hmm. And we know that small righties do get hurt a little bit more often.
Sure.
And then looking at his vertical movement, where he's lost an inch of ride since the beginning of the season, maybe even a little bit more since his peak. And, you know, in the WBC, he's lost 2 inches of ride off his WBC.
Yeah, this is a 19 plus IVB early on, and we're seeing 17 and change now.
Yeah, and then Velo started out the season at 93. It might be coming back.
It's at 92 now.
But it was bottoming out at 90.
Yeah, I remember that.
The Mets with 90.7.
Yeah, that was bad.
So I, you know, maybe a couple starts back from the break. Maybe the break will do him some good and the Velo's back up. But I do struggle with where to put him, considering he is in my top 10 for Biggest Losers, going from 99 stuff plus to 83, and almost all of it coming off the fastball.
You know, I'm really upset I didn't wear my Shota Time and AGA shirt right now. It came in the mail. I've been wanting to have
it. What is an AGA?
What, it's Ace is gonna ace.
Oh, nice.
It's like he's the prophecy. If you guys don't know, Ace is gonna ace is the term I gave myself for writing the SB roundup, where I didn't want to say anything every night about like Clayton Kershaw back in the day or something. He was good. I'm like, please don't leave me write something new.
Oh my god, I need to write blurs for my top 25. And yeah.
Well, I'm writing the blurs.
Top five, I'm like, yeah, after this, so really
whatever,
good.
You know.
Yeah, I know. And you write a lot more.
No, I yeah, so I'm an AGA is literally his name, Imanaga, which is the greatest thing ever. And I am so conflicted because I'm with you a bit here that I mean, look, Imanaga's biggest fear with him really entering the year, yes, the injury stuff, it's an interesting idea. Maybe that is true, maybe it isn't. It was home runs. It was, you know, we heard a quote about the Yankees saying like, well, they don't think that he's going to do well in their park because of home runs and whatnot. And we are seeing those show up more so as the weather gets worse for Imanaga. The biggest comp I've had for him is Joe Ryan, overwhelming fastball splitter. Not as good for Joe
that's
Ryan.
That's what I had coming in. Yeah, Joe Ryan was the biggest one.
And then what happened last year with Joe Ryan? He had such an amazing first 2 months and then home runs appeared and it started to get worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
That could very well happen for Shota. Thing is though, you know, I had a tweet when Imanaga was signed for, what was it? Like $60 million over 4 years, something like that. And
4 years, $53 million. There's
oh my gosh. And just saying,
they still Imanaga, maxes out at 80 though.
This is the contract that every single team wanted. And they just gave him, this is the pitcher that every team wanted. And he just went to the Cubs. This is the greatest steal. This was like January when he signed. And because I made that tweet, it's clearly going to work out this entire year.
So I wanted him on every team. I was like, yeah, why don't the Giants sign this dude?
Oh, man. Randy Wilkins and I were talking a lot about the Yankees signing Imanaga.
The Yankees are the one place where I was like a little bit nervous.
I don't care. I mean, their park factors are interesting too, because yes, it is bad in one place. And then it's not universal around the stadium that it's bad.
But it's bad in a place where lefties might have, well, he's a lefty, huh?
Yeah, he's a lefty though.
Oh yeah, he's not a short righty. He's
right.
So then, but he's still short. I don't know. Short. I think short is a little bit correlated with more injuries.
Oh yeah. Well, that makes more sense. There's just less body mass to endure generally. But anyway, Shota Imanaga. That's a very interesting one. I'm gonna give one more, and then we're gonna, you know, we gotta get going. I know a little extra time for you guys because we missed last week. It's on me. It's completely my fault. Someone that I'm very worried about for the second half. Look, they're like a collection of these guys. I mean, we can move past the whole Rangers Suarez thing. I think we all know this. That's fine. We get that. I don't know what to do with Kevin Gausman, to do with Freddy Peralta, with Freddie, with Framber Valdez. Like, even Tanner Bibee. These are all of the same bucket to me of, we know what's good and we see it sometimes, but then we don't always see it. I mean, especially with Gausman, I think that some people are saying, no, he's going to come back. I'm on the opposite side. He hasn't had his splitter doing splitter things for a bit now. He had, I think, 17 whiffs in a game. It was 15 of them was on the four seamer. And I just go, no, that can't be the life of Gausman. This is a pitch that gets hit all the time, and he needs a splitter to be that.
I'm also worried about with him, just the advent of the Traject hitting machine.
Sure.
There's just something about the fact that he's a two-pitch pitcher.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you could practice against that, maybe you can spot it easier.
You know, here we are talking about, like, how do we make pitching worse? And it's simple. We don't do anything with the game. We just get better technology to study. That's it. Oh my gosh.
I had Gausman as a big bounce back candidate, but since then he's only lost stuff, and he's kind of settled in to me as like a around 30 is just sort of like, mm-hmm. like an SP three-ish, two-ish.
I have him around like 45, 50 because it's just cherry bomb. It's just, I don't know, man. The whip is a very underrated stat, I think. And he does damage against that with his hit rate. What are you doing with Freddie Peralta?
I still like him.
Why?
Well, he is on my stuff loser list, but he started out with so much.
Yeah, right. Oh my god, the four seamer was just bonkers out of the gate.
Yeah, he's still good. I mean, I have him at 103 stuff plus recently, down from 114. So that that may cost him. I am in the middle of doing my rankings, but we have a 3.49 ERA projection for him. So it's hard for me to move him down very far. Sure.
Yeah.
I could maybe move him down. I have like Grayson Rodriguez and Garrett Cole and Framber Valdez around 15, 16, 17, which is
Hold on, Eno.
What?
Framber Valdez.
I have a 3.5 ERA projection for him. But...
I have him at 45.
Yeah.
Framber Valdez. What is the thing that we both yelled at each other last year?
The command is bad.
Well, finally, he threw a slider finally again, but it's sinkers, curveballs, and changeups, and there's no cutter. It's gone.
The cutter's gone. I think it might have been hurting him or something.
I don't know. Yeah, there you go. Bring it back full circle. I don't know if the curveball or the changeup are going to be there any given night. I just don't. And it's so back and forth. And I look at the other guys. Like, I wonder what
he's
off
about Renato Lopez. Dude, he has so high floor. I cannot hang with the... Yes, dude. He's a 3.43 ERA over 810 innings. Yeah. He has not finished a season in the last five seasons with an ERA higher than 3.57.
I understand that. I guess it's 1% like...
ground ball rate. He's still elite floor. So, like, 45 is way too low for me. Maybe
I understand...
High.
So I want to make sure we understand each other. Elite floor to me, you're saying for the extent of the full season. The reason I reacted that strongly is because his game to game has been absurdly back and forth. It hasn't, like, I don't think of Valdez as consistent. He might be taking Jose Barrios' spot.
Dude. Like, he has a one game with a five and one game, two games with a five and a game with an eight out of 16 starts.
Well, okay, so I see five walk games. I see four innings, three runs, three walks, eight hits, five Ks, 11 base runners in six. I'm seeing a lot of just back and forth. It's like, is this good for me in a 12-teamer or not? And it's painful if you're Roger, 20% K rate with a 128 whip so far, 3.66 ERA. Fortunately, the Astros started to win games, and he's got three in his last four. But Framber Valdez has just been like, do you have strikes with your curveball and your changeup today? I don't know. He's taking over Jose Barrios as the great undulator at this point.
That spot for me is a little bit of a tough spot for me because everybody above that, I'm just like, I really like, and everybody below that, either I like better. Like, I have Joe Ryan right below that, partially just because he has a four projection. So that's a half run difference in projection.
Yeah.
And as much as I like Joe Ryan, he's the highest ranked guy I have with a four ERA projection.
Sure.
Right. I just don't know. Can I move a guy that has a four ERA projection into my top 15? I don't know.
Yeah, that's tough.
Like Eric Crochet has a 3.3 ERA projection. I could move him ahead against Fromber. How many innings am I getting out of Crochet?
That's a whole other conversation for another time. I have a whole ramble about overthinking how many innings, because who knows how you get it and when you get it. It's Roto versus head-to-head. There is some conversation there. It's like, where's it going to be in September? Is it going to be what they're doing right now, which is just limit him two innings and he's going to the back end after the break? And there is some rest right there. But I think
also
generally really we overvalue expected innings, because who knows what happens the next two
big stuff loser Crochet.
Really?
Yeah. 17 points.
Does stuff hate his cutter versus his slider?
It likes the slider more. So maybe it's a good idea for, you know,
I would say results. Over the last 2 months. So like May, June, Crochet, is it trending down? Because he became like a two-pitch pitcher after the first month.
Yeah. And that always makes me a little bit nervous.
That's true. Crochet didn't really have like his slider commanded well. The cutter looks just like the four-seam weirder guys, and it's just...
He's holding the velo, though. In fact, it's kind of rising. So I'm getting an argument here to maybe put Crochet up higher and put him...
Yeah, let's go. Longer.
But... But like Cole is right there in the middle of that.
Yeah,
I do not know what to do with
him. Yeah, I know.
Some of this, he has a 3.5 ERA projection. I see like some of it's just legacy almost. It's like, if you did not know who Gerrit Cole was before right now,
sure,
what kind of a projection would you give him?
But I still
give him a 109 stuff plus. So it's like he would actually still get a pretty good projection if he was a rookie.
Right. And obviously we do need to factor in that he is a veteran and we do trust him to make adjustments better than someone who's younger,
and
right,
they trust him and level. Like trust that his 97 location plus isn't actually valid, you know,
right, or that he'll make adjustments with his pitch mix or what he needs to do on a given night, you know, to get through a game differently.
But a 14 K-minus BB is not good. I mean,
I think we all expect that to change over time. I mean, George Kirby, by the way, big riser to me. I meant to mention him before. He's going Blixnell blueprint almost. I mean, the thing we're talking about with Rodon doing fastballs upstairs and above, and then secondaries all over the zone. Kirby.
I mean, I've had him in the top 10 all year.
Nice.
So I've moved him into sixth.
Oh, really? Kirby at six? Oh man, yeah, I see it.
I can
definitely see that.
You're getting me to push Peralta back. I just can't. I mean,
I don't want to do Peralta. I think he's Professor Chaos again. He doesn't know where it's going again, and I hate it. It drives me nuts.
He's been good for the year, though.
Yeah, he was so good. I'm certainly biased to like the day to day more so, because I'm very much of like, okay, this is the trend of a guy and stuff, and it can lead to other things. And I absolutely, when I do my list every week, I have to do the small changes. I don't want to do the big ones. I don't want a guy who's at 14 all of a sudden is at 40 or something like that. Right. So I need to roll with how they're looking. And if this is what sticks, this is where they're going. So which is how Framber Valdez is where he is now.
A 10 strikeout, 0-1.
I know. It was the first one. It was like, this is the first time in a while that I felt like he was really great. And I'm just like, I don't know what to do with you. I just don't know.
Where do you have Luis Castillo?
I have Castillo at 13. You
22.
Oh wow,
it's just the slider's disappeared. It's strange.
Yeah,
he's actually a stuff plus gainer because the fastball is gaining really velo as he does, you know,
right?
But the slider is not where it was, and they've apparently told him to do this to the slider on purpose.
What?
Yeah,
why?
Because they think it'll be better. I think it.
But he was so good.
I think he's throwing it softer.
I don't know. I gotta look more into that. I mean, I saw a stretch where Castillo wasn't really feeling that slider, and I assumed it was just a normal stretch. Every pitcher goes through valleys during the year. And I didn't want to discredit him.
Yeah, the slide was 83.
Really?
Yeah, he was at 85, 86, 87. Like, it just took a...
Pretty much like Gilbert and Kirby.
June 87, July 83.
What? I wonder if that changes. I wonder if it goes back. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, one more.
He obviously has the ability to change it back because he just did that last month. So it's like... Yeah, there maybe he should be higher.
All right, you get one more, Eno. Then we gotta say goodbye to these people.
Oh, I got one more.
You get one more. One more person you want to bring up.
One more person that I think is gonna drop.
You're like, I don't know what to do with this ranking.
Oh. I don't know. I'm working through it right now.
Shout into your podcast app, guys.
I guess one thing. I have a Shane Boz and Brian Wu next to each other. And like, there's no reason I shouldn't love them. You know, I've loved them. I've loved their stuff. I've drafted them. I've put my finger on them. Said these are great young pitchers. And yet, while I've watched them recently, and sort of. I felt like I wanted to reach into the TV and hug Brian Wu, but that like I somehow felt his fragility.
Yeah.
Is he small?
He's being so careful. Like,
is he small? Pitches careful or what? I don't know. Something about him. I just wanted to be like, it's okay, dude. I don't know.
Well, I mean, he's been just back and forth and they've been limiting him to like under 70 pitches. And then he had like, right. the hamstring and he had the
what am I supposed to do with the guy that is, like yeah. getting three innings per start, you know?
Well, I mean, they haven't been able to ramp him up.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
And then Boz, he looks pretty good, but he was a world eater.
Yeah. Well, right. Like, the sliders lost 200 RPM.
He looked like the next Jesus. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, he just looked like I was like, you know, I famously said I wanted to crack Bobby Miller and rub him all over my nipples. Like, that's how I felt. Right.
Okay, hold on a second. Adam, go back and just remove that from the record.
Well, that's just how I felt about Shane Boz, where I was like, oh, this is it. He is him. Like, I wanted to anoint him the best pitcher. It's like your own personal Paul Skeens, where you're like, dude, Shane Boz is going to be the best pitcher in baseball next year. That's right. How I felt about Shane Boz.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he broke our models, too.
And then I watched him, and I was like, these breaking balls don't
slider seem was worse.
As sharp.
Yeah, they weren't.
And he didn't look, he looked beatable. Stuffless still loves the fastball so much that I can't push them down too much. Their projections are sub-4, but I have them behind guys who have 4 projections like Cutter Crawford and Seth Lugo. Maybe that's too aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
I have them behind Bryce Miller.
I have them right next to Bryce Miller. I mean, I think
they do seem somewhat similar where it's like, Stuffless loves them. Is it all
well?
There?
I think Boz is a better breaking ball, is ultimately what I went with.
Yeah,
that might be true. But with Boz, I mean, maybe it's exactly what you've been saying this entire podcast, which is he got Tommy John and he wanted to be a little more careful with a slider.
Mm.
You know,
what did Cole Reagans told me, at least when he came back from the double Tommy John, was that he did so much rehab, and I think that probably describes Shane Boz, where he's like, I've done so much rehab, you know. Right. And he said that in the rehab, you get a lot of flat ground, mm-hmm. and right. he said there are these weird things that happen to your body when you do flat ground, where you your body starts adapting to flat ground and starts being, he called it pushy. You start and you don't want to really uncork because you first of all, you don't trust it. Like Michael Conforto told me, like for the first year after surgery, he couldn't do a one-handed finish on a swing because he just knew that he didn't want to feel that feeling of his shoulder popping out again, you know? So it's that, like, I don't trust it to let it eat. And he said, Reagan said part of what happened at Tread was they were just like, let it eat. Like, get up there and throw the hell out of it. Like, what the hell are you doing? You know, and just kind of stop being pushy, stop being careful, just trust it and go. And
like the Charlie Morton thing too. He added like 2 ticks or something when he started to actually like push off and do all
and it was like for him, that was intention. It was intention. Yeah. It wasn't as much, you know, mechanical or stuff. It was just like, oh, I can just try and throw as hard as I can all game. Okay, now I throw 94. So maybe that's going to happen for Shane as he, like, you know, has another start and he's like, okay, I didn't get hurt, you know? Let me go out there and unleash it. Well, so I can't push him down too far, but I can't, he's not anointed. I can't put him in my top 30 and be like, yes, Shane Boz is here. You know,
I have him at 49. I mean, the thing is, like, again, there's so many pitchers, Nick Pivetta, Valdez, Green, Gausman, Bibee, like Gavin Williams, Bryce Miller. They're all in that tier for me.
I have them. Yeah. I have a lot of those guys right there. Gavin Williams, I'm not in on.
Mm.
I just don't think the stuff has come back. It's not the same as what it was before.
Interesting. I mean, he was always an extension guy, right? Like 7+ feet extension, 96 on the fastball.
I don't think the velo's back.
He was for a start. For one start, he had like 97. He was, and then he went to like 95, 96 in the second one.
Yeah. Well, for whatever reason, stuff is not picking it up. It says 91 stuff.
Well, actually, it doesn't surprise me because his sliders changed.
Yeah.
It was.
And I don't. I no longer like treat Cleveland as like a pitching factory. Like,
hey, all right.
I don't give them. I'm not like, oh, well, he's with Cleveland, so like, you know, give him a bump there.
Right, right.
I don't really do that for Tampa anymore either. Like, I have Zach Littell pretty far down.
Yeah, he does what I call dancing with the disco, which is acting like Tony Disco, aka Anthony Descafani, just throwing sliders. Yeah. I promised one more, and we gave you a couple extra. So I'm gonna cut it quits. Okay, you know, we gotta stop it somewhere.
As we do.
You know, give us the rank again. I missed you, buddy. I got to write. Yeah, I go write up this stuff. I got to get the list out.
Yeah.
Tell us what is coming in the pipeline. Obviously, your rankings are.
Yeah, got some rankings. I have a cool piece up with Rustin Dodd right now about Seth Lugo and his nine pitch types, pitch classification. They have a Twitter where they announced that he has 9 pitches now.
That's incredible.
He's the only pitcher with 9 pitches in baseball. He was talking about how the Mets didn't want him throwing the sinker. He talked about how Ruben Niebla knew that he would never throw another pitch for the Padres because the Padres were eliminated, and still went out and had a bullpen with Lugo and taught him the cutter in that final bullpen of the season. So
awesome.
Some cool stuff there from Lugo. And you know, Rustin's a great reporter. So he went back and talked to people who have known him his whole life and got some cool vignettes from back in the past. So
that's
what's up in the future. I don't know. I'm working on an Orioles thing. We got to figure out the Orioles.
Alex, stop texting me about it.
Yeah.
By the way, Renee Deckard put out an interview she had with Seth Lugo on the Pitchers Slice. So go check that one out. Awesome stuff. I mean, Seth Lugo is the best.
Oh, and I'll be gone next week. I'm going to Seattle for a week. Any listeners in Seattle, hit me up. I might be around. It's a family thing. So we're going down to Mount Rainier and we're going to Olympic and we're going up to the islands. But
amazing.
Maybe I'll leave the kids for screen time and go hit a bar at some point.
Yeah, of course. We know you are going. I don't know. I think I send you some recommendations your way.
I'll be at the game on Tuesday.
Oh, nice. If the case is I having a guest instead, I will actually another different guest, not the same recurring or familiar recurring guest. That is, you know.
Might be a good time for a guest.
I have a couple of people in mind as well. But, thank you so much for being a part of this podcast. Always a pleasure chatting with you. On behalf of Vino Stars, I'm Nick Pollock. And we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.